This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about special education and services rights of special needs children, as required by the Federal Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, to which we'll be referring to as IDEA. That's IDEA. My guest is Lynn Hansen, an attorney who represents special needs children and their parents. Ms. Hansen's law office is in Oakland. She is a former administrative judge in the area of special needs children and did that for many years. She's now in private practice and has been for several years at this point. There are a couple of things before we start talking with Lynn. I'd like you to know that the office in California that I think you need to be aware of is the Office of Administrative Hearings. I'd like you to be aware of the phone number should you be the parent of a child who has special needs. It's 916-263-0880, 916-263-0880. You can go to the website by Googling the Office of Administrative Hearings if you like. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by a number of entities of the State Bar, the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful, frankly, to have you here. I guess what we need to do, what is special education law?
Well, special education law is individuals with disabilities in the Education Act. And this came out of the American with Disabilities Act, which was signed by the first President Bush in 1991. It was incorporated into the education system in 1997. The main purposes is to ensure that all children with disabilities have a free, appropriate public education made available to them that emphasizes their special education needs based on their unique disabilities, and to prepare them for employment and independent living. There are many aspects to this law, and not the least of which it came about because prior to the signing of this law, disabled children were mostly segregated into special schools. The intent of this law is to have children with disabilities incorporated as much as possible with non-disabled peers, and that's the intent of this law.
So they can become the overall population.
Yes, so that they can, one, learn from other children, so that other children can learn from them, and that they have a program that meets their unique needs. And this could mean that there would be modifications in the education program. There could be special related services. Sometimes there is a modified program where maybe a child is in a special day class mm-hmm. and general education. But the whole intent of the law is to place these children with non-disabled peers to the extent possible.
Now, IDEA is a federal law.
Yes.
We also have the California Education Code, which mirrors that?
Yes.
Who's paying for this? Where's the money coming from for the special education and special services for disabled children?
Well, the feds pay for a chunk of the services. The state also pays for a chunk of the services. So the State Department of Education is responsible for some of the funding. Mm-hmm. And I think President Obama just about 2 years ago created a $4 billion fund to help.
Well, Michelle Obama, I think, was very much involved with that, was she not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the things that I wonder if you don't mind my moving to this right now. You have mentioned to me before we went on the air that a number of these children are autistic.
Yes.
I wonder if you would tell us what does autism mean? How does it show itself? And what about early intervention? How significant is that to a parent or parents who may have an autistic child?
Well, autism falls on the same bell curve that we all fall on. So there are some people on the autism spectrum that are very, very smart. And then there are some people on the lower end of the spectrum that do not have many capabilities. These are the children that honestly you hear about the most. I was involved with a child that had seriously, her father had taught at Harvard. She had had from birth on the best intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But this, when I saw this child, she couldn't learn anything. She was a runner. She would take off her clothes and run. She was about 8 years old by this time.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other end of the spectrum are very, very, very smart people. They don't have the social skills that other people have, maybe. They don't have the eye contact. They aren't able to kind of discourse back and forth because they don't understand the process of social cues and the meaning of, of language lots of times.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many interventions. Most of them, it's best if they come when children are very young, because that's when children are developing social skills, ability to kind of have a what's called pragmatic language, which is a back-and-forth kind of language.
A conversation with people?
A conversation, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And hopefully what happens in the school district is they will give them some kind of pragmatic language, which is basically a social kind of program where they have two or three kids talk to one another. Sometimes on the playground they will have what's called a shadow aide to encourage the child to play with the other kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because many autistic kids don't have social skills. They aren't included with the other kids because the other kids see them as a little bit different.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they don't have the social capabilities to go up to the other kids and mm-hmm. say, let's play kickball mm-hmm. or let's mm-hmm. swing. Mm-hmm. They generally are pretty much by themselves.
When you say very young, to deal with these children who have autism on a very young basis,
mm-hmm.
what are you talking about? What age should parents start thinking seriously about trying to help their kids?
Well, they have a lot of new studies now, and they notice that kids that don't point, kids, babies that are like maybe a year old, maybe
yeah.
four, that are not pointing.
Really?
That's a signal.
No kidding. Wow.
Because they're not paying attention to their environment. They're not relating to what's happening as they go around. Also, many times kids, what they will say is that kids will start language and then regress. So if your child has started language and at about 2 years old is shown some kind of regression,
mm-hmm.
is not really appropriately socializing, is not pointing,
mm-hmm.
these are the things that you should look for. And I would say immediately take your child to a pediatric specialist.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
Because it might not be autism. I mean, we know Einstein didn't talk till he was three.
But is that right?
That's true. But the
point, he did okay. He did okay later on, yeah.
So the point is to at least have somebody check, because the earlier the intervention, the better chance your child has of becoming a functioning person.
Now, before we went on the air, you mentioned to me that if a child tried to get for this early intervention to the child at an early age, and I think if I am remembering correctly, you said if you wait until your child is 8 or 9 years old, that might be too late. Would you tell us about that?
Well, technically, the window of opportunity is up till about 7 years old.
Really?
That's when your child should be having the most intervention. There's applied behavioral analysis, which is an intervention where an expert comes to the home
mm-hmm.
and they take the child and they hold their face and they talk to them and they kind of help the child very intensively answer mm-hmm. back or mm-hmm. have eye contact so that they're intervening with these children when they're very young, so mm-hmm. they learn to have eye contact and learn to be responsive to human touch. Many autistic children don't want to be touched because they have a lot of sensory issues.
Really?
And sensory issues are their clothes bother them sometimes, they're too close to people, sometimes they're too close, sometimes they're too far.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the same kind of sensory integration that typically developing kids might have.
A question has just been brought into the studio that I think merits of dealing with this at this point, if you don't mind. Given the widespread tendency of many school kids to engage in bullying weak and vulnerable kids, do you think that automatically requiring special needs children to be mainstream is really a good idea? Subjecting special needs kids to bullying can be very traumatic. What thoughts do you have about this?
I think on the whole that mainstreaming children, all children, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because the children that are typically developing learn many things about kids who are different. And that's, I think, the crux of this,
mm-hmm.
to have kids learn that not everybody is the same.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to dismiss the bullying that these kids go through, but certainly, most recently, districts have been obligated to address bullying very concretely. They have training for teachers now, but kids that are bullied, if their parents must notify the district that their child's being bullied, because if the district has no notice, they cannot address the
issue.
Right,
of course.
So if the child or the parent notices the district that bullying is occurring, the district has to take concrete steps to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is, and these are the laws that have come down and said, well, you know, all kids are subject to some kind of taunting or
mm-hmm.
whatever, because
mm-hmm.
that's just how junior
that's
high.
That's how kids are. They're
that's
nasty,
how kids
generally.
Are.
Just nasty
they,
kids.
They poke each other. They call each other names.
Yeah.
But the key criteria is this interfering with this child's access to education?
Yes. Okay.
Is it making him anxious? Is it making him mm-hmm. emotionally upset? That's the criteria.
That's what it is. Okay.
Right.
All right. One of the things that, how does, what's the order in which parents can try to get a school district to pay for special education, to perform special education, perform special services? What does a parent do?
Well, there are two ways. First of all, the district has to assess the child to determine whether or not
But the parent has to ask the district to do that, though, doesn't it?
Well, two ways.
Okay.
The parent, you know, there are various categories, autism, deaf blindness, traumatic brain injury, various other kinds of categories. If the parent believes that this child is not accessing education or has some kind of disability,
mm-hmm.
they ask the school district to assess their child. I always tell parents to ask in writing. Put this down in writing. Put everything in writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way to do it. The second way to do it is the teacher might also notice that this child is not learning the way other kids are learning, or somehow is falling behind, somehow mm-hmm. is not processing words appropriately, and the teacher can then refer the child for an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
The assessment is conducted by the district, and the district then determines whether or not, one, the child has a disability,
mm-hmm.
and two, whether that disability is interfering with their access to the education.
Yes.
If the disability is not interfering mm-hmm. with that access and they're making progress and moving from grade to grade, they are deemed not eligible for special education services. So it's really up to the district in terms of their assessments. They must assess the child in every possible aspect of the disability. If the parent disagrees with that assessment or that determination the child is not eligible, they may, with notice, written notice to the district, tell the district that they are going to have an independent assessment done,
mm-hmm.
and they want the district to pay for it.
I see.
The district has two options. They can agree to pay for it.
Or they don't agree.
Well, no.
All right.
Or if they don't agree, they must take the parent to due process. They must prove
yes.
that their assessment is appropriate and their decision that the child is not eligible is appropriate.
Where does that due process hearing goes before whom or what?
Well, you file a due process motion in front of the Office of Administrative Hearing.
Mm-hmm. That's a state agency.
And within 10 days, that the district has to have a resolution meeting with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Within 30 days, the Office of Administrative Hearings will set up a mediation consultation. Everybody, the Office of Administrative Hearings will send an administrative law judge to conduct the mediation in hopes that parents can resolve with the district their issues. Mm-hmm. And within 45 days, they set a due process hearing. And that's just like a trial.
And that goes, again, before an administrative law judge.
Yes.
What happens if a due process hearing takes place and the parent wins? Mm-hmm. What happens then? What's the response? I mean, what if, for example, a parent hires an attorney to represent him, her, or them mm-hmm. at the due process hearing? What can they expect?
Well, you file the due process motion and you outline all of your issues, because if you leave any issue out, the officer,
then that's you're gone. It's gone, right?
The officer does not have to hear that.
Yeah.
So you outline all of your issues, and it's just like a trial. You have binders of evidence. You prepare witnesses. You submit all of your administrative law mm-hmm. information, and the hearings usually last from 1 to 4 days. The judge, within 75 days from your filing, from the date of your filing, makes a determination. Mm-hmm. And with that determination, they state who the prevailing party is. Mm-hmm. And if the parent prevails and the standard is a preponderance of the evidence,
that's
51%,
okay,
then they are afforded compensation, possibly. They're afforded money for attorney's fees. They're afforded basically make-up time for their child. In the filing of the due process, the attorney or the parent, whoever files this, must state what the resolution would be. Mm-hmm. And if they want to be reimbursed for costs for tutoring, or they want maybe make-up hours for lost educational time with their child, if they want attorney's fees, they outline all of this in the proposed resolution mm-hmm. after mm-hmm. each issue.
What if the parent loses? What step?
Well, if the parent
what happens there?
If the parent loses, then they don't get
all of those things.
Any of those things?
Can they appeal somewhere?
Yes, they can go to federal court and appeal.
Oh, they can. So this is the next step. If a parent loses at the administrative hearing, then they can file what, an actual lawsuit in federal court?
Because this is a federal law.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
They can go to federal court.
All right. Would you do this, because I think that this is important that people understand. There are some children who may not quite seem like they're right, but that do not qualify under the IDEA federal law. What kind of problems would they have that wouldn't call for a special treatment here?
Well, let's say they fit one of the categories. Maybe they have autism.
Okay.
But they're very smart. They are verbal. The district has offered them maybe some kind of modifications to help them be social or address some of their deficits. But that disability must impact their access to education.
Uh-huh.
So on the other...
So if they're getting A's or B's or maybe even C's, they're not considered a special needs child. Is that correct?
Right, because they are making appropriate progress.
I see.
Now, the key to all this is the district must offer a basic floor of opportunity. You do not have to offer special needs children anything other than a basic floor of opportunity. So if the child without special education modifications or related services is meeting that standard, then the district can say they do not qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Now, parents can file a due process motion and say, no, mm-hmm. my child qualifies under maybe speech and language.
Yes.
Or even emotional disturbance. Or autism, even. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, he might be making progress, but socially...
He's just...
He is not making progress. Behaviorally, mm-hmm. he needs a behavior intervention plan. Mm-hmm. There are various things that this child needs, mm-hmm. and he isn't accessing his education appropriately. Gifted children can receive special education.
Really? Okay. Really. If a parent, in the final analysis, though, loses at the hearing, and I know that from what you just said a couple of minutes ago, if the parent wins, the parent, the assessment will show that the parent is entitled to be reimbursed for attorney's fees and various other things. If the parent loses, though, under the law, both federal law as well as the state law, is the parent then obligated to the school district for the school district's legal fees?
Well, technically, the district could come back and state that the parents must pay their attorney's fees. I read all of the cases that come out of the Office of Administrative Hearings. I have never seen a case where a district came after parents because, honestly, districts appreciate and understand that they need to work with parents. This is a disabled child. The law requires that there be some coordination and communication in order to help this child access education. And I don't know of any case where the school district came back, at least in California, where the school district came back and asked for that.
Do you find that when you get clients, whatever way it turns out, do you find that parents are somewhat reluctant? Well, what if I lose? Am I going to be obligated to the school district for its legal fees? Does that occur to a significant percentage of your clients, or what happens there? Because I would think, people are scared of lawyers because they're so expensive.
Well, I've never ever had a parent ask me if they were ever going to have to pay
really?
The school district's fees. They've always asked me about my fees.
Do I have to pay your fees? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I can understand that.
How can I afford your fees?
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Private schooling. What's the issue there for parents and their kids and a child who may have special needs?
There are two issues here. If the child has special needs and has been designated a child to receive services under IDEA, the district may place that child in what's called a non-public school.
Mm-hmm.
A private school is determined to be a school that makes money. I mean,
sure.
Now,
it's a profit type of thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
But a non-public school, which is certified, the state of California certifies many non-public schools. So if parents and districts agree that their child will be placed in a certified non-public school, the district writes that on their IEP, their individual education plan, and the district pays for that placement. Issue number two, if the parents determine or decide unilaterally that they do not think that the public school is offering their child a free, appropriate public education, and they notify that school district 10 business days before they place the child, they can then ask through a due process hearing for the district to pay for that. The district mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily have to pay for that, but if the parents can show that the district did not provide appropriate services and placement, the district will be obligated to pay.
Mm-hmm.
If the parents do not give the district any notice, their chances of having the district pay for any kind of placement is just not possible.
Sure, that would make sense.
Secondly, private school kids placed by their parents in private schools do not have the complete right to receive a free, appropriate public education.
Mm-hmm.
They're deemed parentally placed private school children. They are not public school children. They do not receive the same kind of special education services that kids in public school receive.
Mm-hmm.
It's public school money.
Okay. All right. Let me see if we've got something else here, because I want to make sure we cover something. There are charter schools. Now,
yes.
How do they fit into this scheme of things?
Charter schools are public schools, And that means that all the services that a child would have in any public school must be offered to that child in the charter school. So if a child has speech and language issues, is autistic, has maybe traumatic brain injury, any of the classifications of special ed, that they have to be served in the charter school.
One further thing I'd like you very briefly to talk about. We've nearly come to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, or on the internet at www.kalw.org, in about 2 minutes or so, we will go into the second half hour of the live program. But what I want to do is, if you would, besides this, I want to let all of you know that Lynn Hansen, I want to give you her phone number as well as her website so that you have it, 510-595-1964. Lynn, LYNNHANSEN, law.com. Should you have a child who you think needs help and you're looking to try to get some kind of direction, that's why I give this to you. Also, the Office of Administrative Hearings, I want you to have that number again, 916-263-0880. And if you want to find the website for the Office of Administrative Hearings, Google that and you'll get it and find out what's on the website there. Final thing, if you would, in the remaining maybe minute of the program, statewide, homeschool children. What's the situation there?
Homeschool children are considered parentally placed private school children. They are not afforded special education rights.
So that's, and if there is a problem with this, is there a potential that parents can find and try to place their child in a public school and get some special education proceeds?
Yes. What they should do is ask the district, assess their child to determine whether or not the child is a special needs child. And then if the district comes back and says, well, that child is a special needs child, and we will offer these services, the parent has two choices. They can put the child in public school, they can homeschool the child, and not get the services.
All right. It is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. If you tuned in a little bit late, we're doing a program on special education and services rights of special needs children, as required by the Federal Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, which is also referred to as IDEA. My guest is Lynn Hansen, an attorney who represents special needs children and their parents. Her law offices are in Oakland. She is a former administrative law judge, did it for a number of years, and apparently felt that children needed more help and their parents needed more help, so she became their attorney, or at least some of these children's attorney. So I want to, if you are in that situation where you might have a question about what rights your child may have or you as a parent may have under the federal law IDEA, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you would like to call in with your question, your comment, perhaps your concern, if your child does have some disability and you are finding that the school district in which your child is placed is not getting the kind of services you would like, I'd like to encourage you to call in. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. That's both in San Francisco as well as Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. It's 650-369-4149. 1-949, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Hopefully you will get a human being on the other end of the phone. And tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced in the area of law that you're having the problem with. And with minor exception, you will find for a half an hour consultation with a lawyer through the lawyer referral service, it'll run you somewhere between $25 to $35. That doesn't go to the lawyer. It goes to the lawyer referral service as a public service. It's something where you can get some very important information. Also, something else before we take our first call on this, I'd like to alert you that tomorrow, Thursday, March 5th, the San Mateo County Law Library will have a presentation at noon, How to Collect on Your Court Judgment. You may be able to get a judgment, whether it's in small claims court or maybe it's beyond that in one of the upper courts. And now the issue becomes, how do you collect your judgment? Then that becomes a very significant issue. David Cook, who's a longtime enforcement and collection lawyer, is the author of the Debt Collector's Handbook, published by the American Bar Association, will be making this presentation tomorrow. He'll talk about how he can show you how to find assets and where to find the treasure map. That's the real key here, how to find that treasure map. That's tomorrow at the San Mateo County Law Library, which is in Redwood City across the street from the Hall of Justice at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, starting at noon tomorrow, Thursday, March 5th. You can bring your sack lunch or however you want to do it and sit in on this. It should be a very worthwhile presentation for you. If you'd like more information, call the Law Library at 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913, and you'll get more information. All right, let's start with Edith. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
You're on the air, Edith.
Oh, okay. I have a question. I have an adult son who injured himself at work, and he also has very severe dyslexia, and he also has emotional, he's quite depressed. And he's been cut off from, he's gone through his disability, are his workers' comp payments, and he would like to apply for disability, but he's just completely lost as to how to do it. And I'm wondering if there's some resource that we could go to find somebody to help him.
How old is he, Edith?
He's 41.
41, okay. Do you have any thoughts for her?
Well, I have some thoughts. He could go to the Department of Rehabilitation.
Okay.
And check that, because they are supposed to kind of help people. Also,
is that a state department?
It's a state department, the State Department of Rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the state, so I don't know, Edith, where you live, but they would have a department probably quite close to you.
Okay.
The second thing is, was your son ever designated as a special needs child in school?
Yes.
Okay. Was he ever assessed by regional center?
No.
Okay. I would suggest that you call, are you in the East Bay or San Francisco?
I'm in San Francisco area.
Okay. I would call the regional center of, I think it's San Francisco Bay, and tell them your story and tell them you would like him assessed for possible services through regional center.
Okay. The regional center of
San Francisco. Each area has their own regional center. There's regional center of East Bay, regional center of San Francisco, and I think it's specifically regional center of San Francisco because San Francisco City and County are the same entity.
Is regional center of San Francisco Bay, is that a state office or is it a county office?
Regional centers are state offices because
yes.
It's state-funded. This is
okay.
The regional center,
yeah.
Basically the state of California, and they have satellites in various counties.
Edith, you should be able to Google that and get a phone number or at least take a look at the website and see what you might do.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
Does that help you?
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
I'll follow up on it.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
Thanks a lot.
All right, if you have questions about a disability affecting your child, the number here is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And certainly, I'd very much like you to call in if you have a question, if you're having a problem with, let's say, the local school district, or you're finding that special education services are not being made available to your child, including the special education, as well as other services. What would the other services be, for example, besides education?
Well, related services are transportation, mm-hmm. social services, counseling, occupational therapy, sensory integration.
I'm sorry, what kind of integration?
Sensory integration.
What does that mean?
That means that especially autistic kids have a lot of sensory issues. Sensory is sound.
I see.
Clothing sometimes bothers them.
Really? Okay.
They don't have a sense of spatial, so they have a lot of trouble, say, playing on bars or things like that, because they aren't able to judge distances or balance.
Really?
So there's a lot of, you can have a lot of sensory integration skills. You can have language skills, assistive technology skills. If your child needs a computer or some kind of assistive technology device to help him or her access their education, the district must do an assessment for those needs.
And how for a parent to try to educate him, her, or themselves on this, is there any particular website? I mean, I've given it at your suggestion to me, the Office of Administrative Hearings, which I presume has a somewhat detailed website. I have not seen it myself.
Right.
Is that where they should go?
I would also go to DREDF, which is a disability rights group.
Give us the initials again.
Okay.
I want to get it.
DRED. It's Disabilities Rights. DRED. Sorry. It's a Disabilities Rights Agency. It happens to be, I know that it's in Oakland, but I believe it's pretty much statewide.
Really?
It's a nonprofit group, right?
Disability Rights Agency.
Yes.
They can Google this.
Yes.
And this is a nonprofit, and they have different offices where people can go.
Right.
Do they have any down in Southern California, do you know?
You know, I don't know,
If I were them, I'd call the Disability Rights Agency in the Bay Area
and try
to get a referral down south.
And also, Office of Administrative Hearings also ought to have an entire list of services for people with kids who have disabilities. They should have a list of agencies that help people know their rights.
All right. Let's take another call. Now we have Maria. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a nephew who he's incarcerated and he's 22 years old. And he has a history in his educational history. He was diagnosed with dyslexia, ADD, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yes.
And it's really hard for him to stay on task, and he gets. And I think it's hard, and he's easily manipulated with his peers.
What's he in prison for or jail for? Do you know, Maria?
He was playing around with guns, and he had shot a friend. He's alive and he's well, but the bullet went through his neck.
Oh boy!
Yeah, and but we. The felony charge has been dropped, which is a good thing.
Well, what is he in jail for? What is the charge now? Do you know?
There was for the gun that he has and the ammunition.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's and I believe that today his case was dropped because the lawyer wasn't present. She couldn't make to his court date today to appear today. So I don't know what's going to happen. Since they dropped felony charges, I'm sure he's getting out. I mean, I'm hoping he's getting out.
Oh, yes.
He'll be on parole. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so worried. We're all so worried. He doesn't get along with his dad.
Okay.
He lost his mother 2 years ago.
Okay, let me stop you if you don't mind now. He is 22 years old right now.
And he's 22, and it's been really hard for him to stay on task with anything. And I did a little bit of research on occupational therapy, you know, and they said the motto was not what's wrong with you, but what works for you.
Yes.
So I think that is probably a good way to focus for him, for us to all focus, like what works for you. And then, but I really am in the dark, and I don't know how to help. I feel really lost.
Let me get some comments from my guest Lynn Hansen and see if she can give you some direction of where you go. Where do you live, Maria?
I live in Marin County, but my nephew's in San Francisco.
So he's in jail in San Francisco?
In the county jail in San Bruno, yes.
Oh, in San Bruno, sure, of course.
Yeah.
All right, well, go ahead, if you would, Lynn.
Okay.
Do you have anything for her?
Okay. Was your nephew ever designated as a special needs child in school?
I believe so. In the parochial, he went to Catholic school, and he was on Ritalin.
Okay.
He had been on...
That would have been a private school, I would think, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you know if he ever, was he ever on what's called an individual education plan?
Yes, he was. Mm. I believe he was. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And did he graduate from high school with a high school diploma?
I believe he did.
Well, go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. It's fine.
Okay. I was going to say because... If he has, then the school district has no obligation to him. I would suggest you find out two things. One, did he graduate with a typical diploma? Not a special diploma, but a typical required high school diploma. Did he pass the high school exit exams? In other words, did he receive... adequate, appropriate education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he did not, if he were a designated special needs child, and if he did not receive that, and he's 22, he can go back and file a due process motion saying that he did not receive a free, appropriate public education.
Even though he's 22 at this point?
Even though he's 22.
Mm-hmm.
If he has a high school diploma, he cannot do this. Only if he has an alternative kind of diploma, he can go back and file for a free appropriate public education. I don't know that I think your chances are very good, because one of the criteria for not serving students is possession of a lethal weapon.
Mm. Mm.
So you already have a nephew who maybe did not get the services,
mm-hmm.
but he has already met one of the requirements that the district would use to say he doesn't deserve the services because he used a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
The other issue would be if he were a drug user.
Yeah.
They can say the same thing.
Yeah.
But go ahead and find out kind of what his background really is, what kind of diploma he has.
Uh-huh.
But I honestly... can't be too encouraging for you because of the gun offense.
So where should I go then for help? So basically, I'm not looking at free services, is that right? If because of all these things?
Well, I don't think that you could get the school district to pay for services for him.
Right.
I would go to the State Department of Rehabilitation.
Okay.
Because they are the people who are supposed to help rehabilitate individuals and get them back into society.
So okay, so find out information through the State Department
of Rehabilitation.
And right. you can Google that, Maria, you know, and you can get the State Department of Rehabilitation's website. I'm sure there are various offices. I even presume there's right. one in you're in Marin County?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there certainly would be one in San Francisco. I'm not sure about Marin yeah. County, but there may be one there, too.
Oh, I think probably so.
Okay.
And
so
then contact them and
find out yeah. what's going on. You know, I also think, Maria, since you are so concerned about this, it probably, pardon me, it probably would make a lot of sense not to go to an attorney to try to get the high school graduating decree for your nephew. That's something you should be able to do. But to get a one-on-one discussion about what may be available, you know, it may be initially not that much money to get an opinion from a knowledgeable attorney who deals in this area, and I highly recommend that. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. I mean, you know, obviously you're very concerned about this, and if you don't do something, in my opinion, and I've been a consumer advocate for a long, long time, you're going to regret it.
Yeah.
So
talk to an attorney who's aware of.
Well, sure. Of course,
yeah.
of course. So good luck to you. I'm going to give, by the way, I hope you have something to write with. I'm going to give the phone number again for Lynn Hansen and her website. Maybe, and Lynn may not appreciate my doing this, but my job is to try to, and she is. I mean, this woman, my guest, Lynn Hansen, former administrative judge, and now she's someone who's trying to protect children and their parents. So find something to write with. Hang up the phone. Turn your radio back on. I'm going to give Lynn's phone number and website again, okay?
Okay.
All right, Maria. All right, Lynn Hansen, who represents special needs children and their parents. Her office is in Oakland. Her phone number, 510-595-1964, 510-595-1964. Her website is Lynn, LynnHansen, law.com. LynnHansenLaw.com. And you should be able to get something. Lynn, please.
One more thing. You might check with the county mental health.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Call county mental health and
oh,
see
yeah.
if they can help.
Yeah. Yeah, there should be the potential of help there also. All right, we have right now Victoria. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's very enlightening. It's a good program. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not a parent, but I have lots of children in my life, and I also have people who are in the classroom in different levels. And two things around early intervention. And child protection. I think that's one of the main goals. If a child is identified by teachers in the preschool or in elementary, and they bring this to the attention, they really have like observed over, you know, several months when that child has come in or just ongoing, and have brought it up to the parents and had interviews with the parents and want to actually make available to them the resources you've been identifying, and the parent denies that there is anything wrong with the child, or they drag their feet, or they just don't do anything.
I see.
And that bothers me, because if you see the trajectory is dysfunction later, whereas that child could be helped early on and be productive and you know, mentally well.
So you're asking, what do you do under those circumstances?
Yes, under those circumstances. And I hear it. I hear it from many people. And I see children myself around me in my neighborhood who I would identify that need help. But the parents are, of course, I'm not in a place to advise them, but recommend. But I do see the need. And I'm thinking, why do the parents see this?
Well, are we talking about parents
let's say the teacher brings to the attention of the parent the behavioral issues that she has or he has observed, behavioral or otherwise, sensory for sure, and would like to have that child assessed. But they cannot do that unless the parents agree.
Why do you feel that the parents are not enthusiastic or not positive about this? What's going on here? Is it an embarrassment, do you think?
I can't actually tell you that because I'm not my issue in calling in. You see, I'm not a parent. I'm just an observer. And,
are these people who are of average income?
For
the most part, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
People of average income, that's right. Yeah.
Well, let me get some comments from Lim Hansen. You can turn your radio back up, Victoria. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
What thoughts do you have for her? I mean, these are parents who just won't want to accept that there's something wrong with their child.
There could be a cultural issue.
Yes.
Some cultures see disabilities as maybe something inherited, maybe something to deny, a black mark on the family. But actually the school district, if the school district has notice and the teachers have notice that these children have behavioral issues or they're not learning appropriately, they have an obligation to file a due process motion to assess these children.
When you say they, the school district itself.
The school district itself has an obligation. Mm. It's called child find.
Yeah.
But a district has a presumptive obligation to find and serve children with disabilities.
This is under both federal and state law.
Mm-hmm. It's called child find. Mm-hmm. Now, they go to hearing, and it's determined possibly that this child should be assessed, and it usually is. Districts almost always can assess a child if they go to due process and the administrative law judge decrees that. But that does not mean that parents have to accept the services.
Mm.
Parents have a right to decline special education services. So that's kind of the dichotomy. The district must assess.
Mm.
They must do child find. But parents have a right to opt out of special education.
So parents can veto this.
Yeah. Parents can say, I don't want special education for my child.
Is there a way, though, in that kind of a situation? I mean, for example, in family court, when you have the parents divorcing or whatever, the court may appoint an attorney to represent the child, and that attorney would not be representing either of the parents. Is there anything like that available in this area of the law?
What happens
to represent the child here, where the parents will not accept that there's something wrong?
If it's a behavioral issue, and if the child is obstructing the educational rights of other children, the district can file for an injunction.
Uh-huh.
They can refer the child to juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the juvenile court steps in and obligates either the family to get involved or a placement for a child. The difference between having the juvenile court place a child, possibly in a residential placement setting or possibly a situation where a child must receive services, the parents must pay for that. If the school district offers services and places a child, that's free to parents. That's that's called a free appropriate education.
I see.
So there are recourses for districts if a child is interfering with the educational access of other children or is deemed to be a danger to himself or others. Mm-hmm. There are some very aggressive kids who throw things at teachers, at students, who attack. And those children, the district is obligated to serve or refer out to another agency.
All right. Cindy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I just wanted to add something to the mix that I think is extremely important in terms of resources for the other parents that were calling. A wonderful networking agency in the city in San Francisco is called Support for Families of Children with Disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the website is supportforfamilies.org. And for all of the questions that have been asked so far in terms of resources, where do you go if you have a child or a young adult, or even, you know, I would also direct that parent to, even if their child is older than 21 or 22, they can still call, and they will refer you to the correct service in the county or neighboring counties for issues of education and rehabilitation. So that's one thing. The other one, it's California Department of Rehabilitation is what the lawyer is referring to. It's not State Department of Rehab. It's California Department of Rehabilitation. That's how you access the website. And then the other thing, it's in terms of the regional center for San Francisco, it's Golden Gate Regional Center.
Okay.
That's ggrc.org. And so those are very important resources for all these families to know of in all these different situations.
How do you know about this? How do you know all of this information?
The lawyer takes that information, too, and can use it for other families
that have
similar questions.
Cindy, thank you. How do you know so much about this? Without a long explanation.
San Francisco County, under Department of Public Health for many years.
Are you? For San Francisco County?
San Francisco County Department of Public Health. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Very good,
okay.
Cindy. Thank you very
good.
Much for calling.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Appreciate
you.
That
Bye-bye.
Very much. That's very good. We have, I think, enough time for one more call. Is it Liza?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you? Do you have about half a minute? If you could do that, please. You're on the air.
Well, I was hoping that people could call an advocate or somebody who can understand somebody else's language, because they don't speak English and they're aware of all this.
Yes.
And who do you go, or do you have somebody? So this way, this isn't carried on at infinitum past college or through college. Speaking of that, I knew somebody who had help all along the way, and she got even more help when she went to a UC college.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was a little bit socially slow, or she needed some special. She wasn't exactly mentally retarded. She just was a little slower. And
well, I'm not sure that we have an answer for you, but turn your radio back up. Go ahead.
There are two ways to get special education needs. IDEA goes from age 3 to age 22. What I advise parents is when their children are maybe seniors in high school to get a 504 plan. Because a 504 plan, which is under the ADA,
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Americans with Disabilities Act. That goes for a lifetime. And so that means that these kids can take that 504 plan with them to colleges, where they cannot take the IEP under IDEA with them because that ends at age 22.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. So the 504 plan, that's part of what the
American with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. ADA.
And that follows kids
their
whole life.
That's very interesting. Well, we have just about come to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. My guest has been Lynn Hansen. She represents special needs children and their parents. Her law offices are in Oakland. Her phone number, should you want to try to get some direction from her, is 510-595-1964. Her website is lynnhansenlaw.com, lynnhansenlaw.com. Thank you again, Lynn.
Thank you for having
Great
me.
Great to have you here. Your legal rights production staff, my engineer, Joanne Marr, and production assistant, Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about employment law, and we're going to be talking about trends with labor relations, unions, and the National Labor Relations Board. My guests will be labor and employment law attorneys Thomas Lenz and Karen Sensor, and I hope you will join in with your questions and comments. That's for next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Yeah.